Welcome aboard, you people. It is the Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeVantis, off for another day of broadcast insolence. It is.
And we all made it to work today. Good job, guys. Nicely done.
It was pretty easy.
It took me like less time.
No, I got here on time. Yeah, I got an oil change on the way in.
The Kennedy was a ghost.
I am not kidding.
I almost got stuck getting out of my garage because they didn't plow the alley. But after that, it was fine. Smooth sailing.
All right. Now you just got a bunch of bosses to say, "All right, let's get back to work." Then. What are they doing, Violetta? Do you have the answer to this? I'm almost afraid to ask because I know that our producer just explained it to me, and I pray that you are able to follow up on this. The Kennedy tonight, they're not going to reverse the...
Right. So the Kennedy Express lanes are going to only be headed into the city. They're not going to reverse them heading out.
Yeah.
And normally they do to help with the evening rush hour commute.
Yeah.
But they're not doing that because they said the heavy snowfall this morning is affecting that, and I haven't got a word yet back on why. I think that they fear if they close them down to switch, the snow's going to accumulate too quickly and they don't have time to plow it before they open it up. So if you keep the traffic moving, it won't accumulate.
Oh, that's a very interesting, I think, thoughtful theory. Is that your theory?
That's my theory.
That's very good. That's pretty good. But the only problem that I see there is that it's not snowing currently.
Right, and they should have probably closed down the express lanes at noon when no one needed them to plow and switch them going out.
Maybe they're afraid it's going to freeze over, but they could, salt.
Listen, they didn't let me into the meetings for
the
ITOC.
So here's the actual answer. They were waiting for the snow to stop, which it has, and now they're going to plow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just the decision they made. So they're going to plow, and they're just going to keep them closed. Outbound. And then tomorrow at 5 a.m., I believe I saw Violetta, check me if I'm wrong, they'll go back to the normal schedule.
So they're just closed?
But it was all about plowing.
So they're headed outbound now?
They're inbound.
They'll remain inbound, right.
They'll remain inbound.
And then late this evening, 9 p.m.
And there was some reason so that they can plow, because obviously most people will be going outbound, you would assume now.
They're
going
to close them at 9 p.m. tonight.
They always
take care of the snow removal.
Right.
The express lanes.
But there was something about plowing. They needed to plow, and it was better to just keep it with fewer cars, which would be going inbound.
You know what?
I'm glad you guys clarified this.
Yeah.
Got it?
They put a really clear press release out.
Really?
I find that, Violetta.
I have the press release. It's just not clear to me.
Put your glasses on. Maybe it'll help you.
No, they don't.
Oh, I'm sorry. They don't have
real... They're fashion glasses.
They don't have real...
Really? We're back on the prescription glass conversation?
Yeah. Hey, why don't we... You know what we should do? Because we are WGN, and I hate to name drop. No big deal. No, pretty big. Number one radio station for 50 years in Chicago. 50,000 watt blow torch. Yep. We might want to just have somebody from... IDOT, explain it to us.
Yeah, maybe call them.
Yeah, there's an idea. Maybe they'll even come on the radio and explain it to us. Because I don't know that this makes a ton of sense, but I'm sure it does for them, and then they can explain to us, and then people won't be so mad.
Well, it's very...
Because I'm mad.
It's unusual.
I got to get out.
Did you drive in? Oh, that's right. You guys live here. I drove in this morning. There were hardly
any... We live in the building here, yeah.
Yeah. I consider you anywhere downtown, you live here. But there were hardly any cars. I mean, that's why it was okay to drive today. So it shouldn't be that bad.
Well,
no, it won't
you
be,
always right. say that, but I have to go out northwest after the show.
See, people like you are going to mess everything up. Don't
and
go out.
Okay. All right.
Why do you have to go out northwest?
Because I got to do it. Because I got responsibilities.
Oh, okay.
I've got a chicken farm out there, and I've got to tend to the chickens. I got to feed them before 9 o'clock when they go to bed.
Don't forget the eggs.
Some holes in that story.
Eggs. That's right. That's what I needed to pick up the eggs. All right. Right now, Violetta Powdermedic has got. Well, first of all, Judy, you should tell us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour news.
And then there's this. They're Chicago. They're real. Watch Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggetts, Larry Potash, and Robin Baumgarten get real in the morning with the WGN TV Morning News Team. Weekdays 4 to 10.
Michael Steele joins us right now, as he does on Fridays, to assess what happened during the week. And Oh, God. And every week is like a month. Hey, before I get started here, I just want to point out, we were just talking at the top of the hour with, as we're crossing over into the show here with John Williams, mm-hmm. that there is there was a story that was posted, or an opinion piece posted by the executive vice president of Fox News about the Winter Olympic team, the United States team for the Winter Olympics. And he said that it's darker, gayer, and more different than in years past. And he was decrying the age of political correctness, and that the USOC has gone in that direction as opposed to the best athletes, because he says that athletics don't award medals to people who, based on their ethnicity or their sexual orientation.
Right. So that means that their ability to ski or maneuver a toboggan or to do curling or...
Yes, it's all based on...
That doesn't count.
That matters.
Right.
The fact that I'm gay sent me to the Olympics.
Yep, you're in.
Right.
Millions of dollars into my so-called training. See, this is the level of stupidity that our country is stooping to. And the fact that someone thinks that they could actually write something like that, and actually I kind of appreciate it, to tell you guys the truth, because now we see where the thinking is. Now we understand a little bit better and a little bit clearer the depths to which the fear of the changes that are going on in this country, the fear of the people in this country, has reached. Hey, how you guys doing?
You know, okay, it's really snowy here, if you haven't heard, Michael. It's, we're surviving.
Yeah. It's super,
as he laughs.
It's super white here, Michael. That's what's going on, in case you're wondering. Hey,
it is. That's a different kind of white, though. That'll melt away.
Right. Fox News does not believe this town is white. I'll tell you that right now. That's for sure.
Not at all.
No. You know, that's the, my point here is Fox has now pulled that. They are backtracking. They have pulled that story off their website.
Well, it was, a senior person on Fox News who wrote the column.
He's the executive. He's the guy who runs the operations of Fox News.
Posted it to their website, and then now they've taken it down. So,
but no, it's great. You got it up there. So now we know. You are wholly exposed. So you know exactly what the thinking is behind the cameras. At that network,
and
that's all you need to know.
I just want to say that I would like to just agree with Fox News here for just a second and say it was so much better in the days of virile straight men like Johnny Weir and Greg Louganis when they were in the Olympics, and was a man, and that Simone Biles. Yeah. Oh wait, what was she? I think that's an indication of, and then we'll get to everything else that's going on here. It is an indication of a marker of great progress in this country in terms of people of color and people from minority neighborhoods, especially getting involved in winter sports. That is because it's an expense to be involved in winter sports. It's a totally different situation.
You got 8 black people up at the Winter Olympics. Come on, man.
I know. That to me is a sign of, they didn't get there because they were black. They got there because they won their position.
I know. It's one of the ultimate equalizers of, it's your athletic ability that gets you there.
Yeah. But some people are upset because this year the gay athletes are actually acknowledging they're gay, unlike in years past where we just went, oh, my God, that's the gayest guy I've ever seen. But he wouldn't say, but he's like, I just can't get a date. It says that.
Yeah.
Johnny Weir.
Right.
I mean, Johnny Weir, after Johnny Weir was done with his Olympic career, he came right out. But they were afraid that European judges, where, like, Russia, the Russian judges, which are very big in figure skating, obviously Russia has a pretty profoundly anti-gay sociological and political stance.
Sure.
So they were afraid that they were going to be discounted for that.
Well,
anyway.
Bruce Jenner, you forget. I mean, there you go.
What about him? I haven't seen him recently. Whatever happened to him? Anyway, let's talk about the president. Talk about the... Now you have a mid-level kind of sex scandal in the White House, if you will, a relationship scandal, where you've got this Rob Portman guy who I always want to make him a senator. This Rob Porter guy who has had to leave And because he's had two ex-wives and now an ex-girlfriend who may have started this whole thing, claiming that the guy was incredibly abusive in relationships. He is reported to be dating Hope Hicks, the communications director. And they've asked him to leave. Now John Kelly has stepped in it a couple different ways here by defending him and then pulling back his defense of him and then defending him again. And then the president today came out and said he was surprised. And remember, this guy, Mr. Porter, has strongly denied these allegations, not referencing the fact that there's a picture of this one of his wives of the black
guy. And he thinks so. Let's just set this in the proper context. Mr. Porter denies everything. He says that the picture that his ex-wife put up, finally put out there because he was denying this ever happened, he says he took the picture.
Mm-hmm.
As if that somehow makes it okay.
Right. Well, he should, what he should do is he should come out publicly and say exactly what the circumstances of that picture were, so that if that's not true, she can sue him.
But he's already left the White House, right? So I don't see him being public about this anymore. It's just a matter of who knew what when.
Well, and the fact that he took the picture. Okay, so fine. Let's have the discussion about why you took the picture. But then could you just go, you just said that you took the picture. You didn't give us any explanation. You said nothing more other than you denied it ever happened. So if my wife puts out a picture of her with a black eye, and the only thing I can say about that picture is that I took it, I'm sorry. I think the rest of the world's going to be left with the impression that, yeah, I gave her the black eye, and I was just, you know what, enough to go, I'm going to take a picture of it. So, yeah. Look, the fact here is that this is all a reflection of an attitude and an emerging, evolving culture within this White House about how they think about these things. And it starts at the top. You know, let's put it in context. Everyone's getting upset about, you know, this whole episode with Mr. Porter, but the attitude inside that particular environment's got to be, well, heck, the commander in chief brags about grabbing women by their private parts. What's a restraining order? What's the picture of a woman with a black eye?
And he had a perfect opportunity today, Michael Steele. I'm sure you saw the president was asked about this. He invited the press pool into the room, knew he was going to be asked about it. Then when responding to the Rob Porter charges, says it's very sad for him. It's a tough time for him. I think you have to remember how great he is. And he did say, and again, that he strongly says he's innocent. So that's true. You have to weigh the fact that he says he's innocent with the fact that two women are saying, well, he did these things. But at the end of the day, how about showing also some respect for the women who are making these charges? That was not included.
Absolutely correct on all of those points. And again, with the president saying what he said, you then run the campaign commercial, hold up the picture of the woman with the black eye. As he's out there, as he's saying, it's all about Porter, not her.
Yeah.
He said he was innocent. He said he didn't do it. Here's the picture of the woman with the black eye.
Yeah.
So you think that this narrative goes away? It's a reinforcement of a narrative that's been set in motion. And I keep saying this and no one believes me, but I think I know a little bit about how elections play out. The economy is not going to be enough to overcome this constant development of a storyline by this White House that comes off as if they treat women as objects. They look at their concerns, particularly as it relates to things like sexual harassment and physical abuse, as a one-off, less important than whatever the man has to say. This is the administration that has now backed by its full-throated endorsement of an alleged pedophile. It is backed men in the administration who have been caught on camera in the case of Lewandowski roughing up a woman, and now given more countenance to another male of their administration with pictures of his abuse of his wife.
All right. I'm over time, but I just want to work this in. Obviously, the government, no, it's my fault. The government, it's opened back up again. They passed this this legislation. It's going to go forward. The budget's going to go forward. Is this a win or a loss for the United States? Win, loss, or tie for the president?
It's an embarrassment. The president was wholly absent yet again. The president could have been on the phone last night calling Rand Paul and said, look, I need you to get in line with us on this. We cannot afford to shut down the government. This is not good for the American people. It's not good for the Republican Party. It's not good for my administration. It's not good for the U.S. Senate. Those calls were not made. There was no effort to back Mr. Senator Paul off that ledge. I mean, after all, Rand Paul's been running around the country talking about how he's got this bro France kind of thing going on with the president now, and they're working on all this stuff. You would think that this would be an area, an opportunity for him to do that. It didn't happen. So it's one more example of a completely dysfunctional political and legislative operation inside the White House that has led to another shutdown.
And we spent a lot of money. I'm sure we have it anymore, but whatever. But I do that at home at the end of every month. All right. Thank you very much, Michael Steele. Appreciate
Thanks,
it,
Michael.
Sir.
Have a good weekend.
All right, there you go. Great weekend to Michael Steele. We'll be back with Judy Pilot coming your way in 2 little minutes.
Oh, Susie Q.
There you go. All right, if there's ever a time we've had to talk to Susan Schmidt, Senior Vice President and Senior Portfolio Manager for Westwood Holdings in Dallas, it is right now.
It is. These are weird times, volatile times for sure.
Yeah. Now, the Dow, I just want to take you through the week now, Susie Sunshine. I just want to, because some clouds have developed in an otherwise sunny forecast. The Dow over the week was up 1 million points, down 10 million points. Do I have that right?
Oh, dear. All right. Let's just go back and say there was a little volatility.
Okay. Now, it ended up today. It was up, but it's still, for the month, what is it down?
Well, it had, all right, let's think about this in bigger perspective.
Okay.
So today we surged 1.5%. Over the course of the week, we're down a little over 5%. Now, that holds for the Dow and the S&P. The S&P is always reflective of the broader market, so I always encourage you to look at that metric, too.
Mm-hmm.
And year-to-date, we're down just a couple percent. So it's an interesting time. It's been a very interesting week. We've had a lot of gyration up and down in the market, and we're finally seeing some correction. And we did, you know, at one point we officially hit the down 10%, you know, correction moment from the highs, so that we're seeing the market start to settle out. Remember that we haven't felt any true downward movement in quite some time. So this is, you know, this week is actually, we go back to January of 2016, where we've had a cumulative week that also gave us that down 5% result, more than 5% result. We haven't felt a week like that since January 16th. So that's effectively 2 years ago. And, you know, we've forgotten what this is like. So the market's kind of getting it all out of its system at once. And we're seeing things, you know, readjust as people kind of, you know, recalculate and re-examine their positions.
Susan, I guess the why part, there's never a total answer to that, but we've been talking about this before with you, in that there's some things happening about rising interest rates and the rising wages report that people are fearful that there might be a little drag on economic growth, not that those kinds of things are necessarily bad, and you've talked about how the fundamentals overall are very good in this market, but that may be how this market's trying to find its way.
That's right. And we, you know, we're suggesting, and the talk among the market participants is largely that the trigger for all of this was last Friday's jobs report, talking about an increase in average hourly earnings, that the jobs number was better than expected, and expectations as we handed the reins over from Janet Yellen to Jay Powell, that the Fed has continued to signal that they're probably going to continue to raise interest rates, all of which was expected. So the fact that interest rates are going up in a moderate fashion and gradual increases, which is actually very healthy for the economy. But we're seeing that, and that started to spark a little bit of fear and a little bit of emotional reaction, because rising interest rates then means that financing gets a little more expensive. There's some concern over, does that mean that's going to slow down the economy? And the market, which hasn't had an emotional reaction, use that, I think, as its moment to really vent some of its emotional stress after having a very long period of upward movements without any true downward offsets.
Hey, let's talk about that emotional moment too, because it's a natural function that when a market gets super hot as this did, it's actually a healthy move to shut off 10%, take a breath, rethink. People recalibrate what their portfolios are. This is widely driven by institutional investment. So you've got computers making decisions. You've got humans like yourself making decisions about what it is their clients should be buying in bulk. You know, when you go out and you make a trade, you're making a trade for millions of dollars at a time. And that's what big businesses do. So this is a moment where maybe they start to think, well, I made a lot of money on this particular stock. I'm seeing maybe, the top of the parabolic curve for that. So I'm going to pull out of that, move it over to this. And I think it's a little lower in that curve. I mean, that's the kind of thing that's really happening here in the main, isn't it?
That's exactly right. And so in the main, what we're seeing is, we've seen volatility creep back up, and there were some derivative instruments and some things on the fringe that, we've been operating in a world where volatility has been very low. So these things on the fringe came back into play, and in some sense, the, concerns and movement around volatility, which had been virtually non-existent, came back to the forefront. Volatility is, up magnitudes of where it was at the start of the week and last week, where we've seen these spikes in volatility. Volatility is essentially the fear factor, the emotional component of the market.
Oh, I got that. I know what that is.
That's one thing you have figured out.
Yeah, I got that worked out.
Exactly.
There should be a row index. So we saw the row fear factor, and that would sort of be the outlier for the, the market.
Yeah, it could be, oh my God, dude.
Right, it sort of starts at oh my God, and then goes up.
Exactly,
from there.
It's like oh dear. The volatility has been very high this week. We've seen some aggressive movements up and down. You've seen these gyrations intraday, and then day to day, Monday not the same as Tuesday, Wednesday. We've seen it go back and forth. And what's interesting here is you've seen a lot of volume. And so people have been, the institutional investors, the professional investors, are really taking stock of the portfolios, and they are taking stock and repositioning with conviction. And so you're seeing a lot of volume where a lot of shares have exchanged hands. People are really, taking a look at their positions and resizing their portfolios. So all of this is healthy. You see that when you start to see differentiation in the market. You get differentiation when you get volatility. So we are, I think, going back to a healthier place, a healthier baseline for the market to be at. But you saw that disruption, and it feels particularly aggressive because we're not used to it. We've forgotten what this feels like because we haven't experienced it in so long.
As a forward-looking instrument, as the markets can be, they were anticipating that this tax change was going to hit. And it would have been actually pretty bad for the market if it had not hit. But now that it's hit, it's time to realize, okay, now that's what the new normal is going to be, at least for the next number of years, in terms of what the tax impact is going to be on these corporations. So they're all trying to figure out the math on that. And then as they're doing that, they're deciding this is a good time for a breather. It seems like it's completely rational and explainable, and I don't think anybody should be panicked. Now, to hear me say words like that.
What did you say?
I can't believe those words came out of your mouth.
I know, but I've been saying that all week, is that this is totally to be expected. And the president, I would like to say, hold on, I'd like to say something important about the president. He got to stop taking credit for the ups, because he's going to have to take credit for the downs. And people are going to, and his critics are going to, like me, are going to be pounding on him when it goes down. And it's not a fair thing to do. I wouldn't do that because I don't think that's responsible to the country, because someone has to be. So in this particular case, the economics, you have to be, I think we need to pull ourselves out of politics to look at the raw economics of this, because that's really what is going to keep people employed. And that's what's really going to drive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly right. Let's look at the economy. Let's look at the underlying. Let's remember that we're at the tail end of earnings earnings reports here. Companies are coming out and talking about how they're doing and the outlook for the year. And they're all coming out and saying largely positive things. So we feel like the underlying fundamentals are good. What you don't want to do is psych yourself out into a negative sentiment overall, which right. then puts a damper on the economy. This is still a very healthy underlying fundamental. We're happy with the tax reforms. Corporations are coming out and telling us about the impact of them. It's positive. We got perhaps a little bit ahead of ourselves in the market because we anticipated really great things from the tax reforms. We may have overshot it ever so slightly, but this settling is just bringing it back into a positive realism of where these things should be.
Okay.
And we're hearing good underlying reports.
There you go.
That's great to hear.
Wow.
Are there buying opportunities now, do you think? Because stocks are a lot less expensive than they were 2 weeks ago. If you talk about the S&P nearly down nearly 10% from the record it hit. And
well, from the record it hit. But remember, Anna, we're like down 2 to 3% from the beginning of the year.
But still, people were buying at that level. And I'm just wondering, are you searching for opportunities here in this market? Or is it not really, is that not really your advice at this point? Or what you would say?
I think there are. Look to the long term. I think there are always opportunities. I think the tax reform and tax changes for these large corporations is going to have an impact over time. And I think what we're hearing is strong underlying fundamentals. And so volatility does provide opportunity because people are repositioning. What somebody else is selling, you might want to be buying.
Yep.
So this is a good time to be looking. It's a good time to be thinking through things logically. Don't react with emotion. Bro, that's real.
We got to get that row index. I mean, we really do.
That should be your ringtone. All right. I got to go. We got to go. Susie Sunshine, right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Susie. Goes.
Thank you.
I know. She's in Dallas and enjoying it. We're sitting here in the snow. That's just what goes on. But
yeah. Are you really at a screaming odd right now, or would you say you're more at a just kind of a, oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Right. I like that. Although we're hearing that a Department of Justice official is just stepping down right now. High-ranking Department of Justice official.
My gosh. That's your political index.
Yeah.
Fear factor.
That's, by the way, that's
fear
always
factor.
It. That's
always kind of right about there.
That has been like that since November of 2016. Here is Violetta. Oh, wait, no. First, here is Judy to tell us what's coming up at the top of the hour in the WGN newsroom. Yes, it's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, I think we've figured out what's going on the Kennedy now.
Oh, good.
We've been handed Guy Trigil is the spokesman now for the for the IDOT.
A good old guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he used to be.
We got a guy.
Yeah. That's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He sent us over the press release again and asked that Violetta read it one more time. Anyway, the express lanes are scheduled to be closed at 9 p.m. tonight. The express lanes on the Kennedy are going to remain inbound throughout. They will not be outbound during the afternoon rush. That is the important thing that people need to know. There's some reason for it, but it's too technical for any of us to fully understand. Judy's news coming your way in 2 minutes. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 yes. WGN. You know, it's 5 o'clock Eastern in Washington on a Friday, so mm-hmm. a lot of news drops. We're still waiting to hear about whether the Democratic memo is going to come out from the House Select Committee Intel on Committee. Intelligence, right?
So they say today or tomorrow, then you never know. You always deliver that stuff on a Friday or Saturday because it gets washed away by the Monday.
But just breaking now is the number three person, the person right below Rod Rosenstein at the Department of Justice, has just tendered her resignation. It's been there for three different administrations. She was appointed by George W. Bush, reappointed by Barack Obama, and then the Trump administration moved her up to the number three position in the Department of Justice, and she is stepping aside. And there's a lot of speculation as to why that is happening right now. So surrounding Rod Rosenstein, we're going to have Mike Rogers on, who used to head up the Intelligence Committee in the House of Representatives, formerly of the FBI, formerly of a gigantic player in the FBI mm-hmm. for years. You see him a lot on CNN discussing all of this, and we'll ask him what he makes of it because it's a big, big deal. He's a Republican congressman, by the way, from Michigan when he was the chairman of the Select Intel Committee.
Sure.
All right, let's Let's talk now about the other piece of news that is just scaring the poop out of me.
Biggest snow in 3 years, Tom Skillington said.
That's right.
I'm looking outside. I know it. I see it. It's piles and piles and piles of snow. They're trying to find a way to put a place to plow all this stuff and put it somewhere. Is it ever going to end, Tom Skilling?
No, it's that's it, Ro. We had a quiet period, and so it's going to snow through March now.
Probably is.
You're hearing that exclusively here.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
If you believe it, I've got some cheap land somewhere for you.
I love how the morning show did the dibs situation. That you had a parking spot when you came in later today. I thought that was very kind of them.
That really was. You know, that's the kind of supportive staff I work with.
Right.
You know, they saved the parking lot.
I don't know where they found all that merchandise the bizarre things they put to save your space. But gosh, you got to be happy that you had it.
I work with a wonderful group. That morning show is something.
They're very creative.
They're very good.
It's an interesting definition of wonderful. I want to play something for you.
Sure.
Are you ready?
What do you got?
We've written a song for you.
Oh, sweet.
Okay.
Tom Skilling Snow Song.
It's a long thing. We could have snow falling over the next 2 days. It appears it's going to come in waves. And then there's another pickup later tomorrow and the first half of tomorrow night.
Last night the city got 5 inches of the white stuff. Got stuck on the ice. Where the hell's that damn plow truck? I knew I should have just taken Lakeshore Drive. The weather's getting worse. It's been snowing since 5. I've been beating on my steering wheel. The traffic is jammed. The road's too slick. Trying not to get rammed by an 18-wheeler or an IDOT truck. It's snowing Chicago. Driving in, it just sucks. This lady almost hit me while she's texting her friends. She looked at me, flipped me off, and she gave me a grin. The traffic started moving, and I started to smile. But in only 20 minutes, we moved one damn mile. 3 hours later, pulling up to my house, my next-door neighbor called dibs, and my spot was a couch. Tomorrow morning, I'm not going to work.
I love it. Oh. That is magnificent.
There you go.
And my spot was a couch.
Yes.
You've seen that before if you lived in Chicago long enough.
You know, the funniest story I ever heard about that was back in one of those snowstorms in the late 70s. Somebody had spent, 3 days plowing out a spot in front of their home, and some neighbor parked in it. Mm-hmm. So they hooked up a garden hose. And it was like 20 below zero, and they sprinkled it for about 5 hours. And so the neighbor's car was encased in a block of ice.
Oh.
And I thought that was kind of a creative way to handle that, don't you?
Did you see those artists created dibs chairs, and they auctioned them off so people could use them for exactly this purpose?
That's wonderful.
Absolutely. This Chicago tradition.
I know.
Many people hate, but some people just say it's just
fair. I mean, what happens if you move someone's chair and just...
Oh, boy.
That's what he just said.
Yeah.
You get encased in ice. And that's the best case.
That's
scenario.
The best case. Believe me, there are probably a lot worse things that have happened.
Yeah.
But
one of these chairs says, "You take a my space, I break a your face." So it just shows you how nasty people get about this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, that's very nice. Mm-hmm. It's creative at least. Do you know it's funny?
Don't you think it's wrong to do that though, right? I mean, isn't it wrong to try? I mean, somebody's already done all the work to, dib up a space.
It's true. And to take their space. I don't blame people for being mad about that. You know, it's funny. Somebody on Facebook sent me this picture of this car that's buried in a drift. And the owner of the car has apparently taken the time to scrape off all the windows. So the windows are clean, but he can't move the car because it's in a snowdrift.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of funny. Somebody else pulled out a kayak, and they were kayaking
that's a good idea.
On the snow. Yeah. Yeah.
There's something. I think that's a new Olympic event.
Yeah. And then somebody else pulled out their I Survived the Blizzard of 79 cup. I've gotten a couple of those.
So what's our total right now?
Right now, the new total's in 8.8 at Midway, 7.8 at O'Hare, but that's light compared to what's happened. We've had 12 at Lamont. And that's from the city manager there, so that's a very reliable report. North Aurora, 10. Lamont, Palos Heights, 9. Crown Point, 7.5. Joliet, 8.2. We had 10 edge totals in Plainfield, Indian Head Park, Land of the Four Seasons in northwest Indiana. Downers Groves had 8.7. Rolling Meadows, 9. DeKalb, 7.5. These numbers, at Romeoville, 8.5. Pell Lake, up in Wisconsin, 8. Gary, 7. And St. Charles, 7.4. So that kind of gives you, there's a quarter of about 10 to 12 inches.
Are we done for now?
It's still snowing and at a pretty good clip in a narrow band that runs all the way from Galesburg up through just south of Ottawa to about just south of Joliet. Joliet's in it, too. And then over to Gary and then across to Plymouth in northern Indiana. The thing's about 30 to 40 miles wide, and we're getting some visibility reports of 8/10 of a mile on that. So it's still coming down. It's ended essentially from the center of the city northward.
But the metropolitan area.
Yeah.
Once you get south of Joliet, I no longer consider that the metropolitan area. Once you get into the 815, you're on your own. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Come on.
Do you know what?
Every man for himself.
I've identified like Kankakee or Bourbonnais as a southern suburb, and people write in and say, we don't want to be a southern suburb. How dare you do that?
Yeah, they don't want to be associated.
And I'm sure.
Well, you know what? They shouldn't take advantage of this economy whatsoever. They should just stay in the economy of Kankakee and be happy with it.
Right.
Well, down at Beecher.
And understand, Ro, that doesn't reflect the good people's, most of the good people's view in Kankakee or Bourbonnais.
I'm sure that's true. There's just the a couple angry of gurdy cranks that are always, gloomy.
Yeah.
You know.
Who have discovered the beauty of social media as they can sit at their keyboard and bellyache about anything.
Oh,
yes,
that's
true. It's so true.
Ain't that the truth?
That's the truth. Those people should be stopped. If the Russians can hear me, I wish they would steal their email.
Right.
Anyway, the point is that this is it's a big storm. Now, tomorrow, let's just talk about what future impacts there are.
We've got a record on the line. It's been 7 consecutive days of measurable snow here. 9 is the record, and we're apparently going to break that on Sunday because we'll get measurable snow tomorrow in a little wave that comes through starting at about 2 in the morning to 4 o'clock and then up to about noon tomorrow. That won't affect everybody, but that's one wave. And then there's another one that comes in. Now, this one's a little more substantial. This starts about 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, Sunday morning, and runs to about 2 in the afternoon. Now, that one could lay down several inches of snow, and there are even a few areas that may get 4 to 6 inches. So I would suppose we have to tack that on to the system we've got going now. And, you know, we've been saying all along this thing.
So 4 to 6 inches, and is that going to tilt north, south? Which way does that go?
It looks like the system tonight is pretty general. And there are some little lake effect flurries that will precede it. And then the one on Sunday, Saturday night, Sunday, that thing will favor an area from, say, Chicago and into our southern suburbs, although there'll be some snow up north as well.
Mm-hmm.
So between those systems, you know, we'll verify our 10 to 15-inch snow event forecast.
What are we
easily
at now, Tom?
Well, we're at, again, officially 7.8 at O'Hare,
8.8
at Midway, and then some areas already have 12 inches down.
And then that Sunday night you were saying gets really cold?
Yeah.
That's when it starts
Clearing out, and boy, when you put down a fluffy new snowpack, kill the winds and break the clouds up, those temps tank.
Boom.
Yeah, so we'll have some suburban 5 to 10 belows by Monday morning. Ooh. But then it starts to moderate a little bit.
Oh, sure, moderate up to 32.
Oh, it'll be up to 32. Celebrating.
That's not bad.
Hey, listen, I'm at 32, and I'm going to be the one like trying to push it to go to 32.1 so it starts to melt.
I know.
You know, we're going to get some solar. We're going to get some sun on Monday, Tuesday.
That you're going to see that February sun at work because even though the readings will be below freezing, it'll start melting because the sun angle's changing.
There you go. That's more of that on the
way.
Right there. I like that. Make it pretty, because right now it's white sky, white now dirty, grimy ground. There's nothing positive about this, Tom Skilling.
It's kind of pretty. Have you seen the trees?
They look beautiful. I agree. I took a walk this morning. Very pretty.
And you know what?
City
I kind of like that low. It's probably a sign that I've got a warped personality. But there's something about the low angle winter sun that just says, you know, relax. Take it easy. Let the burden slow off your
Really? You know what it says to me? No. You're not going to survive this. That's what it says to me.
Cover.
Yeah.
I know. And
but you know what's weird is that those snow mountains are already starting to get big in some areas.
Yes.
Especially on some of the side streets I was walking today, and you wonder, you just start adding more snow to that, and those are going to be little walls of snow.
Yeah, because those take a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's your, like, late March, early April. They're still there.
Yeah,
you know, like, they're black, and you know, grimy, and they're just and they leach out, you know, just more dirt. You know, it's like it gets oily, And it's oily, dirty is what it is.
Yeah, and they get
and
frozen
see what,
over.
What nature's doing there is priming us for that first beautiful 70-degree day where the buds start exploding and all the rest, and all of us go into a spring high.
And then you forget all this somehow. It's just out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, well, we should. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Tom.
Guys,
we'll talk to you on Monday.
Have a wonderful weekend, and enjoy the additional snow road.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, Tom, thanks.
I will.
See you guys. Thanks.
Bye, Anna. Won't.
Bye-bye. See you, Anna. Bye-bye, guys.
Judy, what's coming up?
I noticed Tom didn't give us a date for that first 70-degree day.
No. June. Judy, what is coming up in the WGN newsroom at the bottom of the hour? All right. Mike Flannery is here. He's the political editor of Chicago. He's on the Fox 32.
Hey, Mike.
And
how you doing, guys?
Debuts a new show tonight. Is that right?
This is exciting.
That's correct. At 9:30, it's going to be it's an eponymous political show.
Oh, it's eponymous.
Flannery fired up. I think that means
I love that.
I think that's Greek for it's got my name in the title.
That's how your agent worked it out. Baby darling, sweetheart, listen, we got your name in the title,
but
they took half the salary away, bub.
They'll give you no additional dollars, but you do get your name in the title. Is that it's a great deal?
That's good. All right, thank you. Goodbye. I got to go. I got to get to Fire Island.
Yeah.
All right.
It's going to be great.
Let's talk about what this is about. It starts at 9:30 tonight. It's going to replay on Sunday mornings. That is my understanding.
At 8:30.
Mm-hmm. And it's on the Fox 32. And just what's it going to be?
Well, it is. We're doing a reboot of the public affairs talk show, and we've got some graphics, and you'll see behind me as I'm talking some footage of the original Great Chicago Fire, which I covered actually, as you may know.
I'm not that old, but I actually was running away from that fire. That's how old I was.
Yeah, Mrs. O'Leary's barn igniting, but so the screen will hop and bop, but we've got a really fascinating interview with a fascinating guy, Gary McCarthy, the police superintendent that the mayor fired as a result of the Laquan McDonald killing. And McCarthy is, of course, he's got a fundraiser this weekend up at the Irish American Heritage Center. It's one of the things he's doing in advance of deciding, he tells me, by the end of the month, potentially, whether he's really going to run for mayor. They don't have to file the candidates for 10 more months. They'll be filing in December. Yeah. And it's the first round of the election is actually 1 year from now. It's in February of 2019. So in the course of talking about the Jason Van Dyke, Laquan McDonald incident. Mm-hmm. Of course, Van Dyke is going to be on trial soon in that killing. McCarthy explains why Van Dyke, like other police officers around the country facing similar situations, may not be convicted. And he talks about something I had never heard of before, the 21-foot rule. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, we talk about that on the
just
show.
Just 12, isn't it? 12 feet?
21, he said.
21.
21.
Okay, 21 man with a knife now facing a police officer.
A guy with an open knife, coming at you, can stab you if you're armed with a revolver.
And that's part of their training videos that police look at when they decide when someone poses a threat wielding a knife.
They can get to you within a second and a half from 21 feet is the concept. And I will tell you something else about this. The video proves that, in my opinion, and the jury will decide this, and you see it really clearly. I think anybody who's watching the video can see it very clearly. There is a yellow line down the middle of the, or a white lane line that goes down the street. Those, dotted lines. And the police are on one side of it, and Laquan McDonald's on the other. And as soon as Laquan McDonald, it appears that Laquan McDonald is walking away from police, but what's really happening is the camera that is covering him is in a squad car. The squad car is moving. So the angle moves, so it gives you the visual appearance that he's walking away. But you see him actually cross the line toward the police officers, which is irrefutable evidence that he stepped toward the police officers, which is the after everything was said and done, and the cooking of the police reports and all the rest of that stuff notwithstanding, the question here is, was a police officer right to fire that first, second, or third shot? 16 is going to be another thing for the jury to decide.
Right.
But it's not a murder charge.
And so after the McCarthy interview tonight, we have a panel discussion, and several members of the panel, including State Representative Mary Flowers, who's an assistant majority leader down in Springfield in the Illinois House, you know, predict that if he's not convicted, there will be outrage across town.
Well, I think it needs to be explained, too. And I mean, they have to explain some of the background on what happened here. Yes, the issue here is you see on video a police officer emptying his service weapon of 16 rounds, most of which enter the intended target here.
Yeah.
After he's already on the ground.
There's
and
also
helpless.
The narrative that was incorrectly or not accurately reported to the public, because they said that he lunged back at the officer after he hit the ground. The video was kept from public view for over a year.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things don't
yes.
help in a situation
no.
make people trust the system.
Correct.
And I think that's a big part of this too. But you'll right. be talking about
yeah.
that. So we got to watch you.
Yeah, I'll tell
and
you.
And when is that trial going?
Well, that's the question. We referred to at the beginning of all this, we referred to how candidates for mayor are going to be filing in 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
The election, the first round, is in February, just 12 months away, February mm-hmm. 2019. You know, that trial, among the issues that they're haggling about now down at 26th and Cal is are questions to be posed to potential jurors.
Right.
If this thing starts, this is all going to be on the front page every single day, and it could play a role.
Yeah.
I don't see how it doesn't play a role
in the
election for the next mayor. Mm-hmm. And you know, unless there's something that comes up to cause it to be delayed.
Mike, quickly, since we have you here, it's nice to have a Mike Flannery here to ask this. There's a new poll out. Pritzker and Daniel Biss, Dead Heat, is one of the
wow.
polls. And that's quite a distance. And it also doesn't reflect the millions that Pritzker has poured into this election. And the idea that just a short while ago that it was sort of sewn up. And who is this Biss guy? A lot going on in the governor's
well,
race.
Well, remember, before it was sewn up for Pritzker, the poll said it was sewn up for Chris Kennedy.
That's right. So, no, that's true.
So this election's on March 20th. There's a lot of money to be spent. A lot of ads to be seen and a lot of campaign, you know, to be had before that. So, you know, when you're 2 months out, as the polls that seem to indicate it was sewn up for Pritzker said, one thing that was overlooked in those surveys was that nobody has gotten on the Democratic side. Nobody's gotten out of the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So Pritzker had it sewed up, quote unquote, when he was ahead like 27 to 10 or 12 for
right.
the for the other two, Kennedy and for Biss. But you know what was in first place? And even in these new surveys, you know
undecided.
Who's in first place? Undecided.
There's a lot of them.
So that guy, he hasn't run any ads that I've seen, but he's in first place.
Coming this fall, Dan Biss takes on Jeannie Ives. Stay tuned. I see that. I see Dan Biss winning, and I see her winning. As crazy as this is in the Republican primary,
Ives?
Yes,
winning?
In the Republican primary, I see her winning it. I think
it's not out of the realm.
It is
absolutely not out of the realm. People,
the activist Republicans who are the people who show up for primaries, are it's a 50-50 split between them, and it's tilting toward her. And the money and the it's just the exact kind of it's the
know,
kind of moment that will
she's following the Donald Trump playbook in this sense.
Boy.
No apologies whatsoever.
Right.
Hey, the guy in the dress, what's so offensive?
That's exactly what they look like.
Hey, don't mind that I'm able to use your little girl's bathroom now. Okay. All right. Michael, we will see you tonight at 9:30 on the
9:30.
Fox.
We'll be watching.
You're the best.
It's Flannery on fire. Pants on fire.
Fired up.
Oh, I see.
Flannery fired up. Not to be confused with PolitiFact rating. Liar, liar, pants on fire.
Got it. Understood. All right. Right now. Yes, the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlasis right here on 720 WGN.
Yes. In downtown, it's still snowing.
Yeah.
You can see it.
Yeah.
A little flurry still coming down Michigan Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
You guys want to go peg cars with snowballs? No?
Okay. You get out of Michigan Avenue, hit buses. They can't stop. This is Chicago. You hit a car, people
ideas.
Stop.
Yeah, that's the fun part, the chase.
Maybe we have
we can go skitching.
We have a former FBI agent
skitching.
Listening to this right now.
Okay, never mind.
Who, by the way, used to be right here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
He knows everything there is to know about me, and that's scary enough.
All right.
And the safest person to be out in the street when you're throwing a snowball is the car you're aiming at.
He knows me too well.
Yeah,
all right, now listen.
Totally gets you.
Listen to this. Mike Rogers is, as we said, formerly with the FBI, and then went into Congress in the state of Michigan, the beautiful state of Michigan, and then he became the ranking person, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee that we're talking about so often these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to run something important by you. Now you, of course, work for CNN, and don't forget, it is the return of Declassified, Untold Stories of American Spies. So we'll get to that in just a little
Great
bit.
Show.
But let's, before we get to that, this breaking news that the number three person, Rachel Brand at the Department of Justice, she is the associate attorney general. She is the one right underneath Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general. She has announced that she is resigning. What do you make of this?
Wow, I don't know. I don't think she's been there that long.
Nine months on the job.
Yeah, that's a bit of a surprise.
But 12 years in justice, by the way. She was there under George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and now under the Trump administration.
Yeah, and she left for a while. I think she did the one of the oversight bodies for the intelligence services. She did the oversight for FISA and all of those kinds of things on the for privacy and other things, the mm-hmm. civil liberties, excuse me. And so that surprises me. I don't know what to make of it, candidly, unless there is something in there where she was related to the FISA applications, I don't know, and I hate to speculate.
ABC News was saying she could have become more prominent if the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, had recused himself from the Mueller special counsel probe, that she likely could have taken over. That's what they're including in their reporting, that she's now stepping aside.
And she's married to an attorney at Sidley Austin in Washington who's representing, and that firm is representing Rick Gates, who is one of the people who's under investigation here. So, I mean, there are a couple, but you know, there's a difference between recusing and stepping aside. I mean, that becomes that's a curious thing. More to come on that. Do you think that the Democratic memo is going to come out from your former committee here?
I think some redacted form of it will likely come out. I just can't imagine that they would the White House would say no to the whole thing. But I would not surprise me if there were some redactions of information.
Because sources and methods are included in this, or because the White House?
Well, I don't know. We don't know that for sure. But there's certainly, you know, it's sources and methods, but it's also if you can tie certain themes together that would lead you to a conclusion on sources and methods. So mm-hmm. it's a little bit more broad than just sources.
But
and
isn't that what the Republican memo tried to do? It tried to tie some themes together loosely, very loosely. Your criticism was pretty clear about that, about the simplicity of that memo.
Yeah, no, I wasn't happy about that. I'm not happy about the dueling memos, and this has turned into such a political gunfight. And mm-hmm. my argument is, listen, in a political gunfight, the first victim is likely the truth. And I think that we're just not going to have enough facts with either of these memos to come to a conclusion, and they have tainted their credibility for any real investigation that may come out of it. So even we're going to get the Democrat memo. I think Democrats are going to love it. They're going to scream, oh, my God, they blacked out paragraph 3, section 1, and, you know, oh my, there must be some conspiracy, and the Republicans are only going to love the Republican memo, and at the end of the day, we're still going to be confused as to what the heck happened. And in the meantime, they're going to besmirch, I think, one of the premier law enforcement agencies in the world that will have both near and long-term consequences.
The FBI.
The FBI and right. Department of Justice, yeah. Now, I'm not saying they're perfect. I'm not saying they don't make mistakes. But you go after the people who have done something wrong. There are mechanisms to do that. Or if you believe that the FBI was inappropriate in its application for the FISA warrant, the secret court warrant, then you do that in a classified space. And when it's all done, you come out with a report with some remedies for it. But right now, who's going to trust anything that comes out of that committee?
The thing that really has started to weigh on me here, among many, but this is the thing that really shocks me, is that we are now questioning everything. We're in a moment of revisionism in American history. And we are looking at these last acts, and it does appear, I mean, it, to me, it's clear. To others, it is less clear. But to me, it is clear that a lot of the behavior around from in the communication between the White House and the Justice Department is simply about protecting the interests of Donald Trump and the family, the Trump family. And that's pretty, and it's right there on its very face. It's what's happening. And when we do that, what we're doing is we're turning our back on our values of at least investigating these things and making sure that the powerful are not taking advantage and gaming the system. And that is what America has always been about. It's been about making sure that the powerful are not overly emboldened, because they are entitled to that power by their by pure virtue. And speaking of virtues, the virtues of what makes America great, that ability to humble the government in front of the needs of the people, is being lost. And that scares me. And I'm afraid that once you lose that, it's very hard to get back.
Well, I mean, I agree. And this, I completely agree with that. And allowing this to continue on where you diminish an organization that's really critical to actually finding corrupt politicians around the country, child pornographers, gangsters, you name it. I'm with you. I'm a little bit worried, and we're so caught up on the Hill in Washington, D.C., in that sharp-edged partisanship that they have forgotten about the importance of their role in making sure the government institutions work the way they are supposed to, not necessarily... You know, these aren't investigations anymore. They're a campaign on both sides.
Exactly right.
And Democrats.
But meanwhile, Mueller marches on, right? So
well,
now
he should. I think he should.
The question is, when he comes out with whatever he's going to come out with, and we will assume that that would be in the next 6 to 9 months would be my guess. At the outside, 9 months, but I'm thinking that 6 months. And then there comes the question of, do you get within that 90-day rule? The FBI has always been reticent about that 90-day rule before a before an election. You know, when you get into that, where do you know what comes out? When does it come out? How does it come out? But this is, you know, we're really at a very we're at a moment where people, we have to stand up for American values. Regardless of the politics, regardless of your tribe here, Republican or Democrat, regardless of what the president says, because if the president's acting in a self-interested way, then which is I don't know why it's, I mean, it is clear. It's clear even to his own supporters, but they like his self-interest because they think he's going to represent their self-interest. And that may or may not end up being the truth, because he's not exactly a fidelitous individual to anything, to his investors over the years, to his businesses, to the people around him. And now you're seeing, you know, you see that every day. So it's just, you know, I don't want to make this personal about him, but it's very, very hard not to in a moment like this. And it scares me, Mike. Just does.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to be concerned about, including your word of fidelitous. What the heck? What did you say?
I don't know. I don't know. What do I know? I don't know anything about it either. Hey, now, DeClassera, are we coming back? Is
we are. We have a third season. It's going to be fantastic. We've got some great stories coming up this year. So it's 8 episodes. So even your Fox listeners right now who watch Fox News, they can even flick over there. Don't even tell your family.
They might have left after I said what I said, so don't worry about it.
When does it start?
Coming out in July and August. 8 episodes, not to be missed.
All right, awesome. I'm glad. I'm very, very. This is a great series. CNN does some nice series. Can't wait to see this Patty Hearst thing over the weekend. Yeah, that's going to be really interesting.
Awesome programming at night.
Oh, I got to ask you really quickly. The Olympics. Did you see that Kim Jong Un's sister is going to meet with a ranking official in South Korea? We also have, you know, that Pence and Kim Jong-un's sister sitting in boxes next to each other,
mm-hmm.
not looking at each other. But what's all this about? Am I to read anything in the tea leaves there?
Well, first of all, I think North Korea understands that their way to edge out the United States is to have a direct relationship with South Korea. The president of South Korea wants a better relationship with North Korea. At the end, I don't think this is bad. We just have to be very, very careful. They tend to do these things when they're trying to gain some advantage or leverage in what they need. They need food. They can't feed their own soldiers and their own people. And they want to do that so they can continue their nuclear program so that they get to become a true nuclear state that can deliver a nuclear missile to the United States. So okay. I think we all try to take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. However, we have to be really careful because their history is not good on that.
Oh, by the way, I'm worried about that, too.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate
thanks,
Mike. It.
Thanks, guys. I'll see you out on the street with those snowballs.
Yeah, thank you.
Missing everything.
Yeah, I hope you don't drive by because I'll miss you, too, pal.
Yeah.
All right.
Good
there
luck.
There he goes, Mike Rogers. Let us now check in with Judy at the top of the hour news. She's preparing it right now. And don't forget to make that big impression on Valentine's Day. Think inside the box. Fresh, juicy strawberries from Sherry's Berries. It's not too late to send Sherry's Berries to save 20% on any of their gourmet gifts over $29 with my promo code ROE, R-O-E. Go to berries, berries.com. That's berries.com. The promo code is ROE, R-O-E. Richard Roper is stepping into the studio with us.
Hey, Rich.
Hello, guys. And as I always advise the youngsters out there, if you're going to do those Sherry's Berries, do it today. Get the gift to the loved one a day or two before Valentine's Day. That's mm-hmm. the move, right?
That's a move.
So you're not just lost in the fog and the avalanche of everybody at the office or wherever getting their stuff. Your special one goes, look, guys, it's February 12th, and he's already thinking about me.
The last minute stuff sort of by the counter doesn't always sell the same way as the one that you plan a little bit. Put a little love into the...
Yeah, okay.
Oh, come on, Ro. Yeah, okay. You know, this is one time of the year. You got to...
And it's always the one time of the year where the second greatest lie that can be told from a woman to the man is told.
Oh, no.
What's that?
Oh, Valentine's Day doesn't mean that much to me. Yeah. Do whatever you want. It's okay.
You don't have to get me anything.
Don't have to get me anything. That is the greatest trap. It's a punji stick trap, gentlemen.
Well, there's a lot of traps around Valentine's Day. I mean, the way women decode the flower color that you send them.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, that's, you know, you just... Just get it right.
All these
There'll be no problems.
Suddenly it's a Jane Austen novel. We're back in time.
We are back in time.
You know, it's
don't worry.
You know, and Anna's right. I didn't even know about that, but there's like
different
purple
colors.
And white.
Yeah.
And,
what does yellow mean? And you have to know this, and white and the red.
I like pink if anyone's writing it down.
Do you have a birthday coming up anytime?
I do. It's my birthday month.
Oh, that's cool.
Thanks for bringing it up, Richard.
February 22nd. I share it with George Washington.
Yeah. Does pink have a decode in it that's bad?
Yeah, light pink rose, generally expression of sympathy or condolences.
So. Well, again.
That's still the color I like. Okay.
Yeah.
It can also be happiness and admiration. So you're covered.
There it is.
You're covered.
Yeah. And what is yellow? Like envy or something, right?
I think that's
yellow.
Friendship.
Yeah, yellow might be more of a friendship.
I think I found that out the hard way one time. I thought that would be just a, you know, just beautiful yellow roses. Really? Just, I'm in that friend zone?
Yeah, it's friendship.
Two dozen roses.
True friendship. And you can be very special if you send a yellow rose.
Yeah.
Had no idea. Yeah. I just like the way the colors are.
Classic friend zone situation.
One of them just means I'm seeing other people, I think. It's really good.
I think that's the pink one. I'm sending you sympathy. Sorry.
So red's the only acceptable color.
Red's the play, right?
Red is love, though. Yeah. And some women might find that's too strong if you just start dating. I mean, come on. Think through this a little.
Oh, God.
What's the one for, hey, is your one friend, is she single still? What's that one?
The one friend from the bar.
You know,
that
I can't
one
remember
night.
Her name, you know, but.
What's she up to?
The aerobics instructor
what
who's going
to
the what's her
advanced
deal?
Degree.
It's the what's her deal color. Yeah. It's the.
Those are the blue glitter ones.
Yeah. You know what I love? I love the
spandex.
The sterling rose. It's harder to find now. That used to be like a thing.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
It's like a silver. Mm-hmm. It's a silver kind of bending toward purple.
Yeah.
Really
beautiful.
Cool.
Those are pretty.
Kind of a Tim Burton rose.
Yeah, see, if you go really exotic, then you're fine, too.
What are you sending Hope Hicks this weekend?
a getaway car. That's what I would send her. A safe word? I don't know. What is it? What does she get?
Yeah.
Oh, God. All right. You know, if it's 5 o'clock.
It's the top 5 on the Rokan Show.
5.
Let's go.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Don't worry. Carnival Wagon rolls at 5:40. It's our new schedule. I know people are like, what? Where's the Carnival Wagon? It's at 5:40. The top 5 goes now at 5, and the Carnival Wagon, all the fun starts at 5:40.
Yes.
That's how that goes. Checking in at
number five.
Well, speaking of hope eggs, Jennifer Willoughby is the ex-wife of now former White House Staff Secretary Robert Porter, who the president said, "I thought he was just a guy who handed me papers. I found out he's the smartest guy in the administration." He's apparently a very smart, charming guy.
He's a Rhodes Scholar. I mean, he's not a dumb dude.
No, he is
very accomplished.
His first wife he married at the end of in London, or in England, I guess, actually, not in London, but in England right after the...
In Oxford, actually.
Yeah, wow. After he finished his Rhodes Scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And then the not-so-much-fun began right after that. Mm. She, Jennifer Willoughby, she is the second wife, and she detailed her relationship with Porter on NBC's Today Show with Savannah Guthrie, which ranged from the verbally to the emotionally abusive to the physically, she says.
Did he ask you to say anything? Did he tell you it was coming? I mean, what was your interaction?
He definitely let me know that I was going to be contacted by the FBI once he was tapped for the White House, and he was curious what I was going to say. He really wanted to know, you know, what are you going to tell them? And I told him I'm going to tell them the truth.
And what did he say? Did he accept that?
Yeah. I mean, I think he knew my character, and he knew that that was what I was going to share.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. So, no, seriously, what are you going to say? To the FBI? No, seriously? You know, this woman also was on CNN last night, and she said that...
with Anderson Cooper, yeah.
They sat down with a lay minister, they're both Mormon, and they sat down with a lay minister in the Mormon church, and the minister, asked her, well, do you really think that this is a good idea to talk about publicly? Because it's a... this is when they were still together.
Mm-hmm.
Because this could hurt his career.
Wow.
And this is way before he was... You know, in the White House or anything like that. Just an up-and-coming political player.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wait, there's more.
What would you say to him right now?
I'm really hopeful that he can face the reality of these issues that he's dealing with. And I really hope that now, in the wake of losing his reputation and his career, the things that he valued most, that he'll be able to really go inside and find the things that actually do matter most about him.
Did you want him to lose that job?
No.
Well, it's interesting because they were asked by the FBI first. I mean, there's a difference here in somebody who's going to write a book and do a tell-all or jump out and try to besmirch somebody. This guy had been there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And in his position, I have my own theory about why this is coming to light now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has to do with Hope Hicks. I think that's what we have to watch here.
Really?
I think that the FBI was aware of these things. The White House was aware of these things. John Kelly was aware of it. Don McGahn, clearly, who's the White House special counsel.
Definitely
he was aware, not special counsel, but counsel. He was aware of this because there was an ex-girlfriend who had gone to him. So this is something that is in
the ecosystem already.
Correct. And people were ignoring it. And the FBI, now as soon as Hope Hicks started dating
right.
him,
mm-hmm.
I think Hope Hicks holds the keys to the Donald Trump-Russia peace. The potential for a conflict, not just a conflict of interest here, but an actual... An attempt to obstruct justice.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And because Hope Hicks spent so much time when they were rewriting that memo and everything. And I think that some of this is coming out to try to pressure Hope Hicks.
Well, it does seem strange about the timing. Even this guy was chief of staff for Orrin Hatch. He's not a political neophyte, and he's, you know, been around for a while. And as you said, bro, the allegations about him have been known for a while.
And so, by all accounts, I mean, we've heard in numerous reports that Hope Hicks is incredibly close to the president, that other than his daughter, there's almost no one that he's been closer to over the last few years. And she started working for his daughter,
Ivanka,
and then became communications director and was involved with Lewandowski before Porter. All that dating in the workplace.
And guys who were kind of rougher on the edges, too.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Anyway, so the pressure is on. Hmm. Well, I don't think this ends quietly. I'll say that. All right, here we go. Checking in at
number four.
And now Ken Starr, remember him? He was the guy that prosecuted the Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Sure.
I never did touch that woman.
The Star Report. It was about 1,800 pages, I think. I guess you remember that?
Right, but you got to remember, this is all about... Now, what he's saying here, it's interesting. Mm. He's saying if he were the advising the president, he'd tell him, don't sit down with Mueller. Mm. Because you know these special counsels, because he was one, they'll find anything. Because remember, it started with Whitewater with Clinton and ended with Monica Lewinsky.
Right.
It could end... The funny thing about this is it could end with Stormy Daniels. Because they could just ask him, hey, did you have sex with Stormy Daniels? And when he doesn't answer or says absolutely not, they'll investigate whether that was a lie to the FBI.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the sort of thing that could happen.
Sure. A number of questions could come up.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, actually, I did have sex with that woman.
Well, especially with the president who I think often believes his own lies as he's telling them. It would be a very dangerous thing
for him. It's the best way to do it,
right?
By the way. Yeah. All right. Here's Ken Starr.
As a practical matter, I think he will go forward, or certainly he needs to go forward. Otherwise,
meaning, hold on. As a practical matter, yeah. You think the president will sit down for a face-to-face interview with Robert Mueller?
Either that, I mean, it's a predictive judgment. That's the way I think it's going to turn out. Because if not, I think, depending on what Bob Mueller knows, he will want to talk to the president. If the president resists, then Bob Mueller has subpoena power.
And what if the president resists the subpoena?
Then it goes to litigation, and we see it in court. And I don't think that's a very attractive spectacle for the president, frankly. There's a huge risk.
Hmm. And what does Ken Starr think the pitfalls are?
Do you think he should sit down with Robert Mueller?
I don't know all the facts. If I had done all the facts, if I'd interviewed the client and so forth, but I would advise him of the risk that hey, this is a risky process. Look, we have two guilty pleas for false statements to the FBI. This is very serious business. This is not a press conference. So the risks are extraordinarily high.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And it could be just like out the door, full Columbo style. For those who remember that TV show from the 1840s.
One more thing. He'd always walk
right,
out of the room and turn around.
Oh, yeah, right. That was the most important question.
Right.
What gets me is why the blue shirt was hanging in the closet.
Right.
You wore the red shirt that day.
That would be the one more thing.
Suddenly,
hey, by the way, was Stormy Daniels good in bed?
Oh, my
god.
You know,
it was like that.
There you go.
And are porn stars better to sleep with than, like, civilians? Oh. And then
catch him right there.
Then, boom. I mean, that's all right, we'll get to your 3, 2, and 1, but first, Judy Pilock tells us what's coming up in the bottom of the hour. Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. Richard Roper is with us. Anna DeVlantis, Rocon, and then
top
the cast,
five at five.
The cast up there, and it is the top five. We're up to
number three.
John Gavin, the movie Heartthrob, who starred in The Imitation of Life, Psycho, and Thoroughly Modern Millie, has died. Hailed as a second coming of Rock Hudson at Universal Pictures, Gavin played Lana Turner's love interest in the remake of Imitation of Life in 1959. He was Sam Loomis in Psycho, right? He was the boyfriend out there. That's where people will really recognize him. He was the guy who shows up back at the Bates Mansion, starts asking, you know, maybe a few too many questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? And they were like, this guy's going to be something.
Suppose you want a room. We were going to try to make it straight to San Francisco, but we don't like the look of that sky. Looks like a bad day coming, doesn't it?
Okay. I'll take you to cabin 10.
We better sign in first, hadn't we?
No, that's not necessary.
My boss is paying for this trip, and, well, it's 90% business. He wants practically notarized receipts. I better sign in and get a receipt.
Thank you. I'll get your bags.
Haven't any.
I'll show you the room, then.
First time I've ever seen it happen. You check in any other place in this country without bags, and you have to pay in advance.
$10.
Oh, just get creeped out hearing that, don't you?
It's such a well-done movie.
To watch it again and again.
Yes.
So
even though you know what happens.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, shot for shot.
And then he was big friends with Ronald Reagan, who eventually appointed him ambassador to Mexico, I think.
How about that?
He also played He also played Julius Caesar in Spartacus, by the way.
Quite a writer in the 60s.
Almost played James Bond in Diamonds Are Forever.
Could have seen that.
Signed to a contract.
That. Right, because that was the one where they'd already... Sean Connery had already left the franchise.
Ah, yeah.
They wanted him back. He says, I won't go back except for $1 million. And they were like, we're not going to pay you $1 million to be in a movie. That's ridiculous.
$1 million.
And then that's where that came from, by the way. And the and that's where the and then they hire him, but he's an American actor. And then there was so much concern, because worldwide box office for that. And then they said, all right, fine, you can have $1 million, but you got to do something about that toupee. And the next thing you know, there he is with Jill St. John.
Wow, nice.
All right, checking in at
number two.
Count Stephen A. Smith out if he gets an opportunity to attend the White House as long as President Trump is in office. Some of the Eagles have said they're not going to go.
Right.
Right. So, Stephen A., would you go?
I would not, because I am ashamed at how he has conducted himself as a leader and a statesman. I'm not getting into the weeds of his policies and stuff like that. I think we all need to become more knowledgeable about the exact job that he's doing. But in terms of their representation, the embodiment of the presidency and what it is supposed to exude, I have been ashamed of how he has conducted himself. And because of that, I don't think he could be trusted in that regard. And I would not show up at the White House.
How many more minutes do I have to sit here waiting for my curly fries?
Always shouting. That's Stephen A.
Never use three words when you can use 157. That's what I love about the most.
Let me tell you what I think.
It's the light red or green. Later. Forget about it. Yeah, it's so great. I love him.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. He's not going. I don't think he got invited.
That's what I don't understand.
Every once in a while, the president, they round up a bunch of sportscasters.
I don't think so.
Invite him to the White House. Yeah. They should.
And finally,
number one.
There's more Omarosa to go around.
Oh my gosh.
They've released more clips previously unseen.
Oh no.
From Celebrity Big Brother, in which she's talking about the end of the world in the Trump White House.
Oh my gosh. The personal toll that I paid was pretty significant.
I feel like you paid the price a couple times, and I feel like you're paying a price now after the White House. Does it feel similar?
This is 100% worse.
Why?
Because it wasn't a game show.
The music.
I like see the pain when people talk to me about it, about how afraid they are. Like even Keisha last night, for her to say that it, she thought I was a part of that. This is not something that I feel good about, because that's not something I was trying to do.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Wait, what's worse, being on a reality show about an administration that acts like a reality show?
Yes.
Or being in the administration that acts like a reality
show? Crazy.
That's the craziest thing.
Yeah.
She is such an opportunist. I mean, the thing is, I mean, listen, she's worried. She's not. She's ashamed of everything she did. Yeah, she wasn't ashamed when she was walking into the Oval and handing some crazy thing off the internet to the president off a Viper and saying, hey, did you see this?
Or traipsing in with the wedding party for pictures. Like, right. It was just like, oh, we can go to the office. No big deal.
She was gaslighting the president and doing all this stuff. I mean, she's like, she is, and she's just a poop starter. That's what she does. She's a stir the pot.
That's what she's doing.
And she's talking to Ross, the intern there, the confessor.
Oh, God.
You guys got to need that music. Next time you talk to Michael Steele, just play that music, because it'll make everything sound so dramatic.
He would hate it.
How's your day? It's very good. Ding, dong, ding, dong,
ding, dong, dong. All right, it's over.
Amazing.
This is it. We got to get to the Knarble wagon.
The top five at five.
To alcohol. The cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! Drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here. I want one bourbon, one shot, one beer. One bourbon, one shot, one beer.
Tastes great. Makes women appear more attractive and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life, and I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it. I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
To all the kids out there, I just want to say don't drink. You know, when alcohol is in your system, you do dumb stuff. Me trying to go on stage with the trophy is definitely in the top two stupidest things I've ever done, but who cares? The Eagles won a Super Bowl. Yeah, I'm still a little tipsy, but the world can kiss my Shut up. I ain't got socks on because I'm tipsy.
No apologies from Kevin Hart there. Proud of what he did there.
We now live in a world in which apologies are they're not just optional, they're actually discouraged.
That was just a fill-in coming out.
Yeah, that was a fill-in. Oh, Frankie O is here from Harry Carey's, along with Grant DePorter. I've never met him before, but I understand he's involved in the restaurant industry
First
here.
First media appearance for the young
Yes, I know, he's very shy. But I just want, before we get to the big toast for Harry, which is coming your way right here on this very radio station next Thursday, 4 to 7, I want to just mention that Frankie O, yesterday we were talking about this with our other friend, Chef Mike from the United Center.
Our other Philly friend.
It's, congratulations. Since I've known you, we've talked about Eagles football with you. And congratulations to you. And finally, Philadelphia has a Super Bowl ring.
Thank you. It's been a lifetime of suffering. And to beat Tom Brady and New England, it was even better.
Yeah. So you know what I mean, and you've always been very supportive of Chicago teams, as you're named by the Sun-Times the best bartender in Chicago at Harry Carey's. You always sit and have listened to Cubs fans and Sox fans lament for their lives, and Bears fans and everybody else.
How about it?
You know?
Now it's your turn.
Luckily, the Hawks have been pretty good in this era, so we're okay. Yeah. But this is a moment for you, and it's funny. If you think Philadelphia is a city that's had a lot of championships, but it's had a big championship drought,
huge drought. Most of my lifetime, and from '83 there was one. There was a Phillies in '08, but the Eagles one is a big one. It's a football town,
and
that's every town I was born. Right, exactly. It takes over, and for me living here I also root for Chicago teams. My kids root for Chicago teams. That I got to watch these long droughts end. You know, the Blackhawks end, the White Sox end, the Cubs end, and it wasn't so much just the winning. It's all the family connections. Yeah. It's, you know, it goes in so many different layers, and I go that it's just crazy. It was a very emotional game because of that, because I just kept thinking of all these different family members. Sure. I wish they were here.
Exactly.
It's just really cool. But like I said, I had watched that from all my friends in Chicago and was very jealous, and then I was there in that moment. It's really
cool. That's awesome.
It'll keep going.
It was just like when the Cubs won the World Series. Mm-hmm. I would happen to have been at Harry Carey's. I met Grant DePorter that night. I'd never met him before.
And he's new to media,
and I was thinking about all of my, you know, my relatives that I wish that I went to baseball games with as a kid, that I wish were there with me to be watching that. And then there's also that moment too where you're with maybe a parent or a grandparent who's a little elderly. I can imagine this in Philadelphia, you know, and you're thinking, well, they mean, you know, I never thought we were going to ever see this together. We got to see it together. That's a very special moment.
Yeah. It is.
And then being in Chicago, the one cool thing I always tell people about moving here and living here, it's like Mayberry on steroids. It's like everybody is so nice to me right now, coming up, congratulating me, well wishes. I mean, and it's very genuine.
Yeah, we were in Philadelphia.
Exactly.
This would not be happening.
I'm not used to that from being from the East Coast of New York. Well, hey, you New Yorkers, you won. Congratulations. We don't do that.
You don't do that.
But everybody here in Chicago is genuinely happy for me. It's such a cool thing.
Because they also know it's a sport.
Yeah, or maybe they're trying to get a free beer.
Well, sometimes that'll happen.
But it was also as the movie guy, I got to say, the cinematic quality of the game and the fact that you had the underdogs with the backup quarterback who was almost out of the game against the Hollywood leading man.
This is going to be a
beautiful
movie.
Wife.
It's going to be a movie at some point, right?
I mean, it's the gritty, raw Philadelphia story.
Next to the Rocky statue, there's going to be a statue of Nick Foles catching a touchdown pass. You know, I guarantee you that's going to be in bronze soon.
It's already a t-shirt that I ordered.
Yeah.
It's already on a t-shirt.
On top of
the Philly
that,
special.
And as you guys mentioned, I mean, like last year, 28-3, amazing comeback. But this game, from the very start, was dramatic.
It was relentless.
You know, and guys who have never missed extra points in their lives are knocking them off the crossbars. And quarterbacks are catching balls. And Tom Brady's got alligator arms. If only they inflated the ball, maybe he could have caught it more.
Oh,
it
was easy.
All kinds of good stuff.
Easy. I just like to watch Tom Brady suffer. All right.
Oh,
let's
gosh.
Talk about, most importantly, next Thursday, it's the 20th annual. Where has time gone?
Wow.
20th annual worldwide toast to Harry Carey. Space, the Infinite Frontier. Now, when Grant DePorter pitched this idea to me of that space is the theme for this year.
Right.
I sat across the table. I think everybody who was at that table, there were a bunch of people, you know, deciding what this event was going to look like. And I sat across the table looking at him like he was absolutely insane. And now it makes complete sense to me.
It does.
That's the way it goes every year. When
that's true.
Jim Cornelison's going to sing Everything Will Explode, which I have. And when I said the word lemurs to Ro one time, I don't get it. The lemurs at Brookfield Zoo went all over the nation.
Yes,
so
that's true.
Can we explain this one?
The lemurs?
He'd have to explain those other four things, but let's focus on what's happening
here.
Why space, Grant DePorter?
Well, remember Will Ferrell did his, you know, the Harry Carey skit with Saturday Night Live, and it was called Space, the Infinite Frontier, where Harry Carey was like an astronomer, like Carl Sagan doing the cosmos. And people like that. I mean, a lot of people, if they were too young, don't really remember Harry, but they know Will Ferrell's version of that.
That's true.
Thank you,
and,
YouTube.
So I thought that would be a theme. Plus, when Harry passed away, Armageddon was the biggest movie of the year, Deep Impact. There was a Star Trek movie. A lot of space was the theme that year.
I love Anna's face.
It's so great.
Anna, welcome to my world.
Trying to understand it. Just trying to get on board.
Just go with it.
I'm asking for an explanation.
Everything is space this year. So I reached out to Adler Planetarium. They're bringing their astronomy. Over with meteorites and moon rocks, and Will Ferrell, we're getting his original costume from Saturday Night Live. I had to have a guy fly in from Florida to hand deliver it, put him up in a hotel for 2 days, and then he takes the thing back.
Okay. And we're all supposed to dress up like astronauts. Is that?
Well, Ro already did. Yes. Astronauts, aliens, meets Cub fans. We're opening the doors.
It's amazing. It's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. He can find any way back to Harry Carey.
Right here. Yes. I don't know. Somehow.
I'm still trying to figure out the whole how many stitches are in a baseball and how many years since the Cubs won the
World Series. I'm taking liberal interpretations. We just got Wilson, the ball from Castaway, and everyone's, how does that tie into any of this? But Wilson was the secret weapon. It was in the Cubs locker room for the last two seasons. And like Rizzo would come in. It was above Wilson Contreras' jersey in the locker room.
Wow.
They had a display, and Rizzo would walk in and scream Wilson as he entered the locker room.
So you're talking about the volleyball from the great movie Castaway that became Tom Hanks' only friend, right?
Yes.
Wilson, that Wilson volleyball is probably one of the most iconic elements or figures or pieces from movies of the last 50 years.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows Wilson!
Yes, Wilson arrived
And Wilson's
going
to be here, you're saying.
Yes, he's debuting at this party.
Just tells you what an amazing movie that is and what great direction and acting was in that movie, because you start to shed a tear for a volleyball floating away from Tom Hanks.
Yeah, isn't that true?
That is the craziest thing.
That's true to me,
it is one of the most iconic things of all times. And the fact that it's going to be there, I think
I'm excited about that. That's the
biggest star of the show. He said, Grant, I don't know how he got my number, but he sent me a picture of this earlier this week. And I'm like, I got choked up because that is, to me, one of the coolest items. Obviously a couple years ago when we did Back to the Future, and there was that, you know, all that Back to the Future memorabilia.
Oh, the hoverboard.
Yeah,
the
super cool stuff. But it's, to me, there's something so poetic about Wilson. And it's a Chicago company, Wilson. And Wilson, weren't they the first? No, Spalding made the baseball, right? That was a Chicago company as well.
But you're right. I mean, if you ask someone to name a prop from a movie, even a casual fan, that's going to be one of the first two or three that anyone's going to mention is Wilson.
Yes. That's going to live in the Harry Carey's
Navy Pier.
Navy Pier.
Yep. Grant makes me wear. He lets me touch the super cool icons, but he makes me wear white gloves.
Yes, I do.
And he stands next to me and he lets me hold it for like just long enough
that's
for the photo.
Enough,
and
Richard.
He really does. Just like the Stanley Cup guy, he has these white gloves he gives you, like surgical gloves.
Yes, I got Captain Kirk's original tunic from season one, from 1966.
I got Bill Shatner's original toupee from 58, so what?
So I had to insure it for $250,000, and I'm making someone take it away that night because I don't want to keep carrying. That's too valuable for me.
Really?
Yeah.
It's that much for that?
$250,000 for Captain Kirk's.
I can believe that.
Well, I have Captain Kirk's and Mr. Spock's. Each one's $250,000.
Oh, wow. Gee. Oh,
so we can't try them on, you're saying?
No,
what I'm saying is get them out of there because I don't want to pay that expense.
I know. No. It's coming in, going out.
Imagine filling out that insurance form.
Yeah, they normally live in Milwaukee.
And they can stay there.
Wow.
As far as I am concerned.
Amazing.
And, of course, you got to talk about Big Harry. Big Harry's getting...
All right, hold on a second.
easy.
Yeah, Ro, come on. You haven't promoted anything in 5 seconds.
Stand by. Big Harry. We will explain what Big Harry is, other than my nickname in high school, coming up. But first, Judy's going to tell us what's coming up on the WGN News at the top of the hour. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. Knarble Wagon is out.
Yes.
We're going to roll the Knarble Wagon. If you don't mind, Frankie, if you don't mind sticking around to serve drinks during Richard Roper's reviews and during Live Music Friday, well, that would really be that.
Absolutely. Oh,
that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Some of the reviews, we're going to need some Budweiser, some cold buds to get through them.
Frankie O rated the number one bartender in Chicago by readers of the Chicago Sun-Times, and he is, of course, at Harry Carey's on Kinzie. And on Thursday, we're going to be there for the 20th annual Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey. The theme this year is Space, the Infinite Frontier. We're not making this up. There's a real reason for it. We'll continue to explain it throughout the week. It'll make total sense to you by the time we get to Thursday. And let me just say that it's going to be a ton of fun. Ryan Sandberg, of course, is going to be there. Yeah. Dutchy Carey, Ryan Dempster, Marv Levy, Ron Kittle. There's going to be a floating Harry like you've never seen before that we are calling Big Harry.
Yes, I wouldn't call him Floating Harry.
Floating
Big Harry. Harry's like 10 times bigger. It looks lifelike. A guy that works on special effects in Hollywood spent about a year making. He loved Harry, so he spent $90,000 of his own money to create a lifelike Harry Carey.
Oh
with
gosh.
every aspect is real. So he's got right. He will be above Ro. Ro wanted him up high so everyone could see him. So Ro can raise his glass and not block Big Harry.
I like that.
Yep.
But the artist worked on things like The Avengers, X-Men. He's currently working on Westworld.
Oh my gosh!
Done like many movies.
All right, stay right there. We will explain more about what's going to happen that night from there. But first, we've got to stand down for Judy Pilak and her news in 2 minutes. That is Tom Holland and the Shuffle Kings, Live Music Friday. They're going to be here.
So good. What you need on a snowy Friday.
Making the making the jazzy bluesy Friday afternoon drink fest that we're having here make more sense.
Nice.
Almost is a little, there's kind of a little Hawaiian wow on that too that I
love
like that.
That
made me feel like I should have some shave ice, and it's sitting right outside in piles that are 6 feet tall.
Go get it.
Yeah. Oh, good God. All right, the Knarble Wagon is still rolling. That's the most important thing here. We've got the 20th annual Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey coming up on Thursday. So, Frankie O, Chicago's most popular bartender, according to the readers of the Chicago Sun-Times, is with us, and he is serving ice-cold Budweisers for us. He also does, by the way, if you happen to stop in at Harry Carey's on Kinzie at any given time, and you ask for Frankie O, the bartender, who's there quite a bit. Likes to do the afternoon drive into the evening over there. Ask for his martini because it is
incredible.
Without question, it's a game changer. It's if they'd had this in the Revolutionary War, no one would have ever suffered during surgery. That's all I'm going to say.
Golly gee.
I just give you more of what you want, Ro.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
That is.
And
so
lately, since the Super Bowl, every martini is tinted green. I don't know how that happened.
Oh, the Philly fan. Wow.
Gigantic Eagles fan. As it is 2 days in a row of great Eagles fans. All right. Now Grant DePorter, he's a proprietor at Harry Carey's. I don't know if people have ever met or heard of him before, but here's the deal. This Worldwide Toast is going to be, it's always a spectacle.
Right.
For 20 years now, it has been a spectacle. We've been, things have exploded in my hand. Things have, I've watched things levitate. I've watched things do all, it's always visually stunning. There's something wacky that goes on. There was a baseball that once exploded that was rather famous, I seem to recall.
Yes,
we set a Guinness World Record. We've had bars and restaurants in 120 countries around the world, over 5 million people over the last 20 years have toasted Harry.
How cool is that? And you're going to have a toast from, NASA this time?
Yes. So I want to do a shout-out to some special ones. NASA, the Johnson Space Center, is toasting with powdered space iced tea. Ooh. I've got National Geographic. There's actually a solar eclipse of the sun over Antarctica that day. So National Geographic, Lindblad Expeditions, is toasting from Antarctica with penguins.
Great.
They're
going to
send
gosh.
Us a video.
And that's awesome.
And I went after all the tall towers in the world because they're close to space. So I want to.
Oh, so
I got three.
Of course you did.
I want to do it because Dutchie Carey was actually on the tilt on 360 Chicago on the Hancock. They were all practicing toasting up there yesterday. But the TV tower in Berlin, the Montparnasse tower in Paris, and Frankie will like this, the One Liberty Observation Deck in Philadelphia, amongst probably 100 other big towers, are all toasting Harry. So
that is awesome.
I just wanted
to say
that. Why
don't you get Comey? Isn't Comey about 6'8"? You can get him too.
Yes.
He's got some free time. He's on the Twitter now. So
that was my special shout out. I had to get that in.
That is awesome. That really is.
And you know what
Pretty
else
incredible.
Is? Can I just tell you why? How big this is? That very, very famous stretch of bars in Chicago on Division Street between State and Dearborn are toasting Harry.
Yes, I need to do that too.
That is amazing to me because Harry used to live at the Ambassador East Hotel, which is now the Public, where the Pump Room was and now it's called Booth One. Mm-hmm. It is he lived there and he would toddle on down to Butch McGuire's.
Yes.
Right? Or the Lodge.
Yep.
And he would hang out there, and this is before he owned his own joint, before he owned Harry Carey's.
Yeah, of course.
And he would, so all those guys, it's sort of like, you know, when the lights on Broadway go dim, you know, for honor of like Helen Hayes when she passed away. This is the same thing. They're, like those bars are celebrating Harry Carey's that
Well,
night.
I called, I had Harry Carey's drinking diary from the 1970s, That's and I right. went through there, and I said, in 1971, he was at Butch McGuire's 70 times that year.
Amazing.
And I was at the Lodge about 80 and so on.
Because he really did write down everywhere he
was. Yeah, he thought he could write it off his taxes.
Yes, for the IRS.
Yeah, six bars a night, every night, every day, amazing. For years. And I also want to throw Eli's in. Even though Eli's moved now to the bakery, Harry spent a lot of time at Eli's. So they're doing a special like cheesecake milkshake to toast Harry.
That was the place. Eli's Place for Steak, which was on Chicago Avenue near its... basically,
the museum, right? The art museum? Was
well,
it over there?
It's across from the Art Museum. It's across from the Metropolitan, from the Museum of Contemporary Art. But it's now where the Children's Hospital is. So just a little something to think about. But it was a place that when umpires would come into town, the umpires and broadcasters would always go to dinner there.
Cool.
Because Eli would, you know, spiff them. And then you'd always hear them talking about some crazy bet that they had with an umpire from the night before. That Harry and Lou
Luciano
and Vince and all those guys.
Eli's was the first restaurant my dad took me to, and I show up and I didn't have the proper jacket, so they pull a jacket out of the closet and put it. It was like 10 sizes too big, but I wore it. It was 4.
That's true. Yeah, it was a jacket required place. Yeah. All right, Frankie, keep the Budweiser rolling, would you?
Thank you very much.
All right, Richard Roper's reviews brought to you by ArchidecOfChicagoland.com.
I want to talk to you guys about the 1517 to Paris, which is a Clint Eastwood movie, and you know Clint Eastwood's an amazing force, 87 years old, and he's made a specialty in recent years about turning real-life events into great movies. Yeah. American Sniper and Sully, of course. So he's taking on the project. The 1517 to Paris, it only happened 3 years ago. You know, he's a quick turnaround. People might remember the story. There was a train going from Amsterdam to Paris. A terrorist was on the train, came out of the bathroom with a gun. And three Americans, two of whom were off-duty servicemen, one was in the Air Force, one was in the National Guard, and their friend, their childhood friend, they were just on vacation, and they subdued the gunman. People know the story. There's also a Frenchman and an Englishman who helped out as well, but the three guys were heroes, and they got the French, the Legion of Honor, the highest award there, and they were honored, rightfully so. This guy claimed he was just going to rob the train. He had hundreds of rounds of ammunition. He wanted to murder everybody on that train. One person was shot and recovered. They saved hundreds of lives. It's an amazing story of heroism. In the 1517 to Paris, Clint Eastwood decided that he would cast the three American heroes as themselves.
Which is incredible.
So Alex Garlados, Anthony Sadler, and Spencer Stone, the real-life heroes, play themselves in the movie, guys. It's not the first time this has happened. Audie Murphy was a famous World War II hero who became an actor, and other actors, other real-life people have portrayed themselves. I'm so sorry to report that it doesn't work and that the film doesn't work, because I thought they'd maybe just have some, you know, part in the movie. They're the leads in the film. So for an hour at least before we get to the incident of the train, we follow these three guys around just as they're on vacation. And unfortunately, they're not professional actors, and it shines through. We've got a scene here where the three of them, I think this is the day before they decide to get on this train on their vacation from Amsterdam to Paris.
You guys just want to skip Paris?
Or at least delay it a little bit.
Starving. Maybe it's like you're saying, like, life's kind of catapulting you towards something.
So right now it's catapulting me towards some hangover food.
Wait, what'd you say?
I don't know, man. It was something I said in Venice. I was caught up in that European high, I'm not going to lie.
Nah. You should have heard this guy. He was talking about how life is catapulting him towards something, like some greater purpose or something like that.
Spencer said that.
I know, right?
You still think that? I mean, I guess, but nothing's actually stopping us. If we weren't meant to be on the train tomorrow, something would physically stop us.
I mean, it's very heavy-handed, like them talking about things are going to have a greater purpose and something's going to happen. Yeah. So I'm giving it 2 stars. I mean, I think, you know, there's a book that this is based on that the guys did with a professional author, and the story's incredible. And these guys were friends since childhood, and, you know, they were in the right place at the right time, and they absolutely risked their lives and saved hundreds of other lives. But we're talking about this as it works as a movie, and it doesn't work as a movie.
That's
and, you know, Clint, you know, no one's going to say no to Clint Eastwood. He's had a relationship with Warner Brothers for like 40 years. He's made successful films. So when he suggested it, they said, if you think this will work, we're going to go with it. And I think, you know, the truth is if they had cast, you know, 3, you know, terrific young actors in the roles, it would have worked. But it just, it does not, it's just unfortunate. But acting is hard. The reason it looks effortless is because the greats make it look effortless, you know, but to put amateurs, I mean, none of them had even been in a school play before, and to put them front and center in a major Hollywood movie, you know, it's a bold and interesting experiment. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I heard him remark in interviews that he liked their chemistry, but I guess that's
they're really likable guys. You see him on the interview circuit. You know, they were Jimmy Kimmel the other night with Clint, and you see him giving speeches, and they're terrific, you know, and they're charismatic. But again, we're talking about starring in a major motion picture, man.
And they're heroes, you know, too. I mean, that's
they're
the
absolutely
thing.
Heroes. Yeah. And they're great guys, and, you know, the story behind it. And they're the interesting thing, too, you know, and it does say this in the movie. It says this in the movie, you'll see, you know, as you read about them, these were not huge overachieving superheroes like, you know, like that had just like they all had kind of gotten a little bit of trouble as kids, and they were just regular guys. Even the Air Force guy, you know, he did okay, but he was not a big time, you know, guy in the service, and you know, they rose to the occasion.
And their moment
sure
came.
Did.
Yeah, and that, oh, and I think that makes it even more impressive. But it does not make, unfortunately, for a full movie.
All right. Okay. Well, what undoubtedly is a completely full movie that I think we cannot miss is 50 Shades of Freakiness or whatever
yes.
it's called. What's, yeah.
50 Shades Free.
See, yeah. Now, all right, we're going to get to this on the other side.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But I just, the ladies and this, and they like the idea. I have a whole theory about what goes on with the 50
you
Shades.
Do.
Yes.
Okay.
Film series and why it has been successful and what it is that drives the success of it.
Okay.
Okay.
And it really has to do with getting even with your man. I'll tell you why.
What?
That's all
even.
About. I have a whole theory.
Okay.
I will not listen. You know me. I have a lot of theories.
Did you catch the trailer for this one?
I did. Yes. Yeah.
Did you read the books?
Nah.
Oh gosh.
I can't see you reading books. I just thought it'd be interesting that maybe you did for some kind of research or something.
Yeah. I'm a little stuck reading the news, but next time I get to you know, I'll get on a beach. There's nothing worse than a doughy white guy who's trying to get a tan in a Speedo reading 50 Shades of anything.
Yeah,
you
I
know,
would
at
agree
the pool.
With that.
That isn't working for anybody.
I don't think you should do it in public.
No. And then in private, you know, that gets uncomfortable. I have impure thoughts. All right. Can you just stay right here for a second and find out what's happening in Judy's news at the bottom of the hour?
Then there's this. Pat has got a beef with a big-time local broadcaster that's on The Next Man of the People with Pat Tomasulo. Watch Man of the People Saturday at 10, only on WGN-TV.
Live Music Fridays, that's Tom Holland and the Shuffle Kings. We're going to hear some live music from them coming up after the bottom of the hour news with Judy Pilak. Richard Roper is here. Roper Reviews, brought to you by Architect of Chicagoland.com. And now let's talk a little bit about this. And by the way, the Carnival Wagon is still rolling. Frankie O is here from Harry Carey's. Grant DePorter, who never gets any airtime in this town, is here from Harry Carey's. He's going to be proprietor and Toastmaster General on Thursday. For the big Worldwide Toast Harry Carey 20th annual invention of that. And it is an invention every year. Trust me, I'm in those meetings. All right, let's talk about the 50 Shades of Nothingness.
50 Shades Freed.
Oh, yeah. This is the last, I hope.
This is the last. And that's why I feel like I am freed now. The 50 Shades of Grey novels by E.L. James have made, they've sold an amazing amount, thousands and millions and gazillions of copies. Uh-huh. And the movies, which are just god awful, have made a lot of money, not just here in the States, but worldwide. And if people don't know the story, it's
in
about
France, this, they think they're real literature.
Oh my gosh. And the whole story is Dakota Johnson, who is the offspring of Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. She plays Anastasia Steele, an up-and-coming young student who then becomes a book editor in Seattle, and she meets Christian Grey, the mysterious 20-something handsome cabillionaire. Mm-hmm. And he's got a whole thing where he likes to do the bondage, and he has contracts with his women, and they do all this kind of kinky stuff. But then he falls in love with Anastasia, and they get married. So that's where we pick up 50 Shades Freed.
For no reason,
they have gotten married. Yeah, and... Well, it's because the two most boring people in the world have found each other. You have never seen a billionaire in the movies who looks like a catalog model who will drain the life out of any room he walks into. He is astonishing. The real sadism in here is having to be in a room with this guy. And Jamie Dornan, who plays Christian Grey, I wish him all the best in whatever future career he takes on after acting, because he clearly has not mastered this craft and never will. So now in 50 Shades Freed, they get married.
Yay.
They go on their honeymoon.
Yay.
And they have the dumbest, most ridiculous fights about the stupidest things. For example, now she works at a publishing firm. She's a fiction editor.
That he owns.
Yes, that's right. He's the boss's 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 boss. And in this world, if you have...
Let me just stop. Yes. Violetta, can he do actual review?
She's really... This is good, though. She's got. Mm-hmm. She's like my little Cliff's Notes. So he sends her an email. Uh-huh. And finds out that she has yet to change her name. So watch what happens.
I tried emailing you. It bounced. There's no Anastasia Grey at SIP.
I know. Anna Steele is the name I use at work. I need to have my own identity here. People already think I got to where I am because of you.
But you didn't. You got this through hard work and talent. Why does it matter what you call yourself? Who gives what people think?
Well, apparently you do. Would you change your name for me?
Yes. I've meant that much to you.
Okay. I'll think about it.
It is really 1955. God. You know what? I was worried about this. We have lurched back in history that they were having this conversation in a movie.
Can you believe? It's like when you're in the waiting room in a hospital and you realize there are still daytime soap operas. That's the only time you see them. Those are the exact conversations they have with that music. And that's the level of the drama in this. And then there's a stupid thriller, and there's kidnappings, and there's like some of the most blatant product placement
you've
ever seen.
They're not just playing kidnapper? They're not just doing that?
No, there's not just that. There's only one funny line in the whole movie when the bodyguards at one point, they trap an intruder in their house, and the one bodyguard goes, I don't have anything to restrain him with. And Anastasia's like, oh, we have stuff.
Oh,
because they have the whole red room filled with restraints.
Wait, give that a moment to breathe.
It is so bad. The acting is so bad. The among the many horrible scenes, they try to show this guy, and they never explain how he made his billions. I don't know how he did it. You know, he's some sort of wizard, but he's got this giant getaway compound in Aspen, and he sits down at the piano and he starts singing "Maybe I'm Amazed." And I'm like, how in God's name did Paul McCartney allow them? He takes "Maybe I'm Amazed" and he murders it. He butchers it to the point where she should have left him right at that moment. I don't care if you're worth $50 billion and you look like a catalog model. What you just did to that song will haunt me for the rest of my life. It is so bad.
Quincy Jones hated it too.
But have you liked any of them?
No. Look, if you take the three movies, I've given them three stars. One star for each movie, which I'm giving this movie, and I'm giving it one star.
The source material though is pretty thin.
It's cheesy. And
I mean, the books.
And you know what? Here's the thing, Anna. If they had said, you know what, let's go with it. Let's go 9.5 weeks and really make some kind of erotic film. But they really kind of, they dial back on that because they want the mainstream audience. And they get more into like the characters, which is a big mistake. Uh-huh. The more they talk, the less sexy they are.
And it's like a porn. Stop with the chitty chat. Hey, this is my theory.
Let's
about
this. Theory.
My theory about this is that women get together of a certain age. You know, and I think it's very much your Eric in the morning demographic here. You've got your 25 to 39-year-old female, and they have decided that they are going to go, and they're going to all get together, and they're going to go to a midday show, bring their own liquor because they don't want to pay the extraordinary prices at the movie theater. They go in groups of 20 or 30. They might bring a sex toy or two and their own food and their own liquor. And they're just doing it to tick off their boyfriends and husbands because they're off on their own and they get to tell them to, you know, and stick it. And then they basically are cheating on them with a movie.
Classic revenge maneuver.
It's revenge sex, except with a movie. And for two and a half hours.
You're basically right. I mean, that's about what happens. I mean, that's who goes to the movies. It is interesting.
That is absolutely not what happens.
It's 100% what happens.
Groups
of 25 girls go to the movies with what? What are you talking about?
With the intention of making their boyfriends and husbands mad.
But you could take out like three of those other examples.
Sounds plausible to me.
Okay, yeah, sure.
The screening I was at last night, I actually went to the AMC River East for the Thursday night screening because I couldn't make the press screening earlier this week. I had a conflict. And
you were embarrassed to walk into it?
I just didn't want to see it. Think of all those men and all those male critics. I didn't want to sit there with all those guys. So the screening last night, now I got to remember, who's going to slog through a snowstorm on a Thursday night to see 50 Shades Freed? And it was me and about 30 to 40 women. Mm-hmm. No, I saw no other men. And they were even taking selfies of themselves, drinking their wine, watching the movie. Yeah. I swear
to
you.
That's the point of it.
It's an event.
Yeah. The thing is, every girl wants to be swept off her feet by a billionaire, and that's the whole thing.
And lightly tortured. That's the way it goes. That's what has to happen.
They say those books have spiced up a lot of relationships. So I don't think it's just a solo get mad at your man thing.
They ruin a perfectly good pint of ice cream at one point in this movie.
Oh, God.
All right.
What flavor?
Vanilla.
Kevin.
It was vanilla.
Follow-up questions, please.
I like pistachio.
Oh, that could hurt.
I think it was the name of one of the characters in this movie, Pistachio, Anastasia's best friend.
Yeah, you get a sliver of that nut somewhere.
Oh, gosh.
Hey, nice. I got to go. Live music.
Thank you.
Live music Fridays continue here. Knarble Wagon is rolling. Harry Carey's is in the house. Richard Roper is doing his reviews, brought to you by architectofchicagoland.com. We got Judy's News coming your way in, too. Rocon Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN.
Yes.
Richard Roper's in the studio. Knarble Wagon is out and it's live music Friday.
Yay.
Tom Holland. I just talked right over the lyrics right there. This is from the album Tom Holland, The Shuffle Kings. No fluff, just the stuff. I love it.
Great title.
I think that basically says it all, Tom. Mm-hmm. I think that's all you need to know.
Definitely. Yeah, it's very special. You guys are awesome.
Thank you.
I think we have a microphone issue with Mr. Holland. Do we? Do we not?
I can jump over to this one.
Yes. Why don't you do that? Why don't you jump on over?
Let's talk to you for a minute here.
We have a looseness of something going on here, and I think it might be the Knarble wagon.
I think so. Cold Budweisers are out.
Sound good there, Tom.
All right, now Tom. Now tell me, first of all, if you just want some kick-ass blues guitar. We have it right here for you.
That's correct.
Yes, there is no, and this is the home of the blues. This is a very daring feat on your part, is it not?
It is
to try to be a blues man in this town.
Oh yeah, definitely. But I've had a lot of practice.
Yeah.
What in life? You mean Tom?
What has given you the blues, Tom? Now, if you want to, by the way, I was saying this to Tom earlier. This is what I love about a guy. This, you can tell, a guy's got a lot of work ahead of him right here, so I got a lot to promote. You got the record out, or the album, I should say, out. No fluff, just the stuff. And that's on iTunes and Amazon, and there's CD shops throughout Chicago that have them too, right? What's your favorite right now? You got a CD shop that you like to go hang out at?
We were talking about it on the break, Hegewisch Records, but that's long gone.
Yeah, that is long gone. But Rose's Records and Tapes is gone. Too.
Exactly. Oh. You know, my go-to is Rolling Stone out on Irving Park.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's
a
good spot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's cool just to walk in there to see the hipsters staring at the things like they found a fossil, you know, and they're looking at it. And what do you think this is? It's called the Rolling Stones. They used to be a band. Yeah. I just think that era of being able to tactile sense of holding the thing, you know, that's gone, the liner notes, all that. I mean, the vinyl came back, though, but we were just talking about this week. Uh-huh. The cassette is coming back.
That's what I heard.
Isn't that the most disgusting thing you've ever heard?
It is.
Audio quality.
No,
I mean,
no,
what?
It's, LPs are one thing, but the cassettes were nowhere near.
But you've heard this too.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Okay. I am bringing back the 8-track.
I enjoyed the
single. I think I still have one.
Remember the ka-single? You just get the one single on the cassette.
Right.
The ka-single.
I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty.
And they were really light.
Right. 99 cents.
You flip it over and you play it again.
Yeah,
and then
that's
it goes
right
back and you flip it over and you play it again. That's the dumbest thing
We don't
thing
need
ever.
Those again. No. We don't need those back.
All right, so here we go. Tom Holland and the Shuffle Kings. They're going to be tomorrow night in Galena. At Smiley Tillman, with the Smiley Tillman
with
Band.
With Smiley Tillman Band, yep.
All right.
It's the Galena Brewing Company's Mardi Gras party.
Oh, oh, that sounds
look at
a
that
ton of fun.
So,
Galena's nice. Beautiful.
Yeah,
isn't yeah. It? Oh, yeah.
I know.
And Mardi Gras parties.
It's a very good place to drive to and leave your car. You know, yeah. You know, they got a bed and breakfast and stuff there. It's really, it's yeah. very, cool. very, very
sweet. Beautiful.
Exactly.
Yeah. And especially with the snow.
Oh, yeah.
This is a great
yeah.
time of year to be there. And then now Lizard's Liquid Lounge. That sounds like that's basically your that's like your home base right there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Matthew Scholar and I run a blues jam there every Monday night. We've been doing it since I want to say June of last year. And you know, it's cozy little neighborhood bar.
Hmm. What's the you address? Know.
3058 West Irving Park.
Yeah.
So it's
right
Irving
there.
Park just east of Kedzie.
Oh.
There are some great, great restaurants right there, too.
Oh, yeah.
That has
oh,
become
yeah.
a mm. little hotbed
really? Yeah.
of the restaurant scene. That you know, these guys, these chefs cool. who've left other programs, they want to start their own joint. Mm-hmm. They go out mm-hmm. there, and there is...
oh, yeah. There's some quality out
there's
there.
There's amazing
oh, yeah.
stuff out
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a speed trap, and I would like to tell you how I know that.
Too. Oh, jeez.
Right there. There's a video speed trap right over the Chicago River right
oh, yeah.
there.
Oh, yeah. I've gotten popped on that.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh,
gosh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, because it looks
know.
Like, hey, it looks, hey, I think I'm exiting onto something, and then you, just, like, you accelerate right over the river,
man.
And then you see the flash.
Oh,
of the
I hate
light,
the flash.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And then,
oh,
like,
the
6 days
oh,
later,
yeah.
the thing arrives in the mail.
They always find you.
Yeah.
They do.
All right. And then you're going to be also at Max on Slade and Palatine on the 16th.
Correct, yes.
All right. So we got everything you're doing here. All right, Tom Holland, the Shuffle Kings, get back to your microphone right
yeah.
now. Let's see, what do you want to do here? What number would you like to do for us? This is all is this stuff you wrote or you want to do a cover?
Oh, this is all my stuff.
All right, let's do that. Tom Holland
really like
and the Shuffle
sometimes.
Kings.
Well, let's hear it.
The album is No Fluff, Just the Stuff.
Always hit the ground, trying to get hard to do. Getting back to you, baby, easiest thing I'll ever do.
Shredding that. Tom Holland and the Shovel Kings. No Fluff, Just the Stuff. Easiest thing I'll ever do. By the way, is on this album.
It is.
No Fluff,
yeah.
Just the Stuff.
That's just good for the soul on a Friday. Oh, yeah. Snowy Friday in February. That's perfect.
I hear that in either an Alexander Payne or a Cameron Crowe movie. Don't you? Sort of like on the road. It's a guy driving. It's got that whole driving beat thing.
Yeah, convertible music.
Yes.
Yeah. That's really
that's
nice,
all
guys.
About. That's beautiful,
great
man.
Sound.
You're
yeah.
awesome.
All right, more with Tom Holland coming up. I hope we can squeeze it in before we got to get out of here. Right now, Rob Martier is going to tell us what's coming in at the top of the hour.